Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is your host, Sharita, of Women Talking Empowerment Show Live. I know it's been a long time since you all heard my voice and we've been on air, but nevertheless, we're on air today, and I just want to say welcome, welcome, welcome. We just got finished listening to Missy Elliott featuring the Clark Sisters, I'm Not Perfect. How are you all doing on today? We're in the month of April. Next week is the last month of the year. Glory to God. Excuse me. I apologize for that. But next month is the last week in April. And, hey, come on, y'all. I just thought I would come on and do a very special show on today. We're waiting on our guest to call in. We have a special guest on today, Brother Omari, that he lives in my community. And he's a local community activist here in Richmond, Virginia. And we asked him to come on today to share some of the things that he's doing, him and a couple of other brothers and sisters in the community to help the community and the residents in the community. But nonetheless, I thank you all for joining me on today. We're going to go to another song, Kern Clark Shear featuring Missy Elliott. Go ahead.
Go get a reef, the top, and I'm from the sea. I can't go.
dream of a soul that I've been trying to have. I'm good. Living that love that I stop living in vain. I'm living understanding. You might have the same problem. You may be the same.
So we have a very special guest on today. We're just waiting for him to call in. Brother Omari, he's a local community advocate, activist in Richmond, Virginia. He's coming to share some of the things that he's doing within the community, him and some other brothers and sisters in the community here in the state of Virginia. But nevertheless, I want to encourage everyone to get aware and get the facts about HIV and AIDS. Know that there are two different things, HIV and AIDS. Go to www.helpstopthevirus.com. That's www.helpstopthevirus.com, because stopping HIV starts with you. So we want to encourage those in the community that is tuning in to get the facts, get educated on and about HIV.
That was Chris Brown, Grass Ain't Greener.
I love that song. I love that song. I play that song all the time when I'm trying to get hyped and get pumped up to do a paper for school. But nonetheless, I want y'all don't forget to go to helpstopthevirus.com. That's www.helpstopthevirus.com. Know the difference between HIV and AIDS. Get educated, because HIV and AIDS is a big thing here in the United States. And it's really, really big, and the numbers of it are increasing here in the United States. So you want to get educated on HIV and AIDS. If you have not been tested, I advise you to go get tested. You can get tested for free at your local health department. You can go into your doctor's office. They will test you, but get the facts and know and get educated on the importance on about protecting yourself from the virus, because it starts with you. And like I said, today we have a very special guest, Brother Omari. He's a local community activist here in Richmond, Virginia. And I just want to welcome Brother Omari to today's show.
Hey, how you doing, sis?
Hi, how you doing? So, Brother Omari, we had asked you to come on today, and I'm honored to have you on today's show on today, because some of the things that you're doing in the community here in Richmond, Virginia, in the north side, in various parts of the city. And I want to ask you, can you, like, help shed some light on why it's so important to get out and to fight for what's right in the community and help the local residents, and share some of the things that you're all doing and how people can get involved, not just here in Virginia, but how people can get involved in their state and city to bring about change?
Well, nationally, there's not a good amount of effective community engagement going into policy making. So, for decades, this has been the issue. And now it's being talked about more and more locally and nationally, that, community engagement, public input, that's what everybody's talking about in a lot of forums. So just for decades, I think that certain demographics have been disenfranchised so much, and they're used to being disregarded by policymakers and their decisions. So, over time, people just become disengaged in the whole policymaking process. You know how it is when people are just like, oh, well, they're not going to listen to us. They're just going to do whatever they want to do, So I think it's important, a good way to get involved, if there's a city council or like a board of supervisors in your city, then your city probably has like a website or something. Like in Richmond, we have a website, richmondgov.com, where you can go and see what's on the agenda for the council meetings, and you can look at videos of previous meetings. You don't have to go down and see every council meeting, but it's good to know what's going on in the city or in your district. A lot of times, things may be going on nationally, and the media may be focusing a lot on that, but you don't want to miss what's going on locally, because that's what's going to have the most direct impact. My organization, recently we've been doing a lot of work in transit advocacy. Demographics are shifting in the country with a lot of people moving from the suburbs, moving into the cities, and also, employment is becoming decentralized a whole lot in metropolitan areas. So it's not the same. We don't have the same work patterns that we had 30 years ago or 40 years ago, whenever transportation first started becoming really robust in the cities. So now we have a lot of coverage gaps. We're getting low income people to these decentralized employment opportunity. So that's going to become more of an issue as these demographics shift more with the metropolitan inversion, you know, basically the people, the descendants of the people from, you know, the great white flight from the cities are now returning to the cities that the property has been devalued. You know, so they're all returning to the cities, which you see a lot. That's why, you know, see the gentrification happening all across the country in various cities, and particularly in the East End and Richmond. So stuff like that is going to continue to happen. So we just have to be prepared and get ahead of it. There's a lot of, like, regional things going on. Like, there's plans that are, like, you know, 30 years ahead. And the information's out there. In Richmond area, we have the Richmond Regional Planning District Commission. And they have, you can go on their website and you can see that they have, like, plans for, like, 2030 and 20. So you can see how the local policies will be in alignment with those regional plans. So I think it's important for us to understand what these plans are so that we know which way the funding is going to be going, so that we can try to get some of those resources into the community to not just identify oppressive policies that we may see coming down the pipeline and spread public awareness about them, you know, and get engaged with it, but also to prepare for that and implement solutions that will be able to, you know, make good use of the policies that are coming.
But if, like you said, they have plans for 2020, 2030, but, you know, thinking back, going back to the plans that they have on the table now and the money that's supposed to be coming in, but there's no money coming into the community to help better the community, you know, especially the low-income communities, and, you know, where's the crime rate, drug rate, teen pregnancies, high school dropout rate is declining. I mean, it's increasing each and every day because of, you know, they're putting money in this area, but not, hey, let's go into these communities and see what we can do to help this community thrive. Like you say, the local bus, different changes going on with the buses, and they're trying to do away with, you know, bringing the buses into the low-income communities and trying to take them, you know, put them into places where buses never used to go before. You know, so what are your views on that?
Well, in the Richmond area, I'm not sure if it's the same in other cities. You know, the demographics and geographies are different, and, you know, basically all that stuff matters going into transit planning. But in the Richmond area, they're not expanding to any new areas. So what they're doing is making it more convenient for the people that are moving into the city. So they're basically removing coverage from other areas to provide more service in other areas. So they're not actually, like, adding any more coverage to new areas, not in Richmond anyway. So basically, like, certain routes with get more frequency and stuff. And so that's all coming about because of, like you said, the lack of the community engagement. They don't come into the communities to assess what the transportation needs of the community are. And what we've found is that with a lot of the new transit planning, it's more focused on commuter access to jobs, as opposed to the other challenges of the community involving transportation, which is, you know, it's more than just job access. There's also food access. You know, it's also health access. So a lot of, when the transit planning is more focused on economics, it's not really going to come to the benefit of low income people.
But a lot of what I'm seeing, a lot of people that live in low income communities, some of them are, you know, some of them don't find employment in the city. They find employment like outside, on the outside of the city, and where sometimes buses don't go. You know, they may go to a certain distance, and then you have to walk the rest of the way. So my thing is, why not expand, you know, especially for purposes of employment, purposes of getting access to local groceries, getting access to major clinics, even though they have clinics here in the city. But somebody might want to say, okay, I don't want to go to a clinic in the city. I don't want to go to a market here in the city. I don't want to go to, I don't want a job here in the city. I want a job outside the city, you know, where so I can make more money. Buses don't go. So whatever options they have is either they got to do ride share. I'm not sure if social services still have the C-VAN services, but that's only for people that's receiving benefits.
Then there's a the whole Lyft group of working. You know, there's a whole group. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And so why not, okay, instead of we rerouting the buses, let's put some buses somewhere, you know, let's create buses to go to these other parts of the city where people that live in these low-income housing areas or communities can have better access. I mean, because, you know, if you look around, you know, there's, I mean, you got to deal with what you got to deal with, but, hey, why not fight for, hey, I work here in the county, because I remember when I used to live here years ago, I worked in Glen Allen in Virginia, you know, and I caught the bus halfway to where my job was, and then I had to walk the rest of the way just to get to work and every day. And if I'm not out, when I, you know, I worked for the government, and if I wasn't out that building by 5 o'clock and at that, you know, walking down to that bus, and I was not at that bus stop exactly at 6 o'clock, I was stuck with nowhere to get home.
Yeah, and those are the challenges that policymakers, they really can't relate to. They don't know about those type of challenges. And to your question, those are all valid questions. And the answer to those, for most people, their answer would be that they don't do those things because that's not the constituency that they're trying to support. You know, like in the city, what most people who stay engaged is of their perception is that in order to reduce the poverty rate in the city, that the efforts are more focused towards bringing in a demographic to the city who has a higher income, and therefore you will reduce the poverty rate of the entire city by bringing in more people from outside who make more money.
To me, it won't look like it. Because if you're not, I mean, how can you decrease the poverty rate by bringing in people that have higher income and that quote-unquote are...
So, all right,
you know,
so
well,
mathematically, if I have, let's say, everyone in the city makes $10,000, and then I bring in one person who makes $100,000, then the average of everyone is going to go up. Everyone's average income will go up because that you now have this wealthy person in the mix. So that's what's going to decrease the total poverty rate, as opposed to actually helping the people who are impoverished right now.
That's what I'm saying. How is that going to help people that are, their income level is below the poverty line or midway to middle class?
Well, it won't.
I mean, how
it won't
help.
It won't.
It's like, okay, you bringing in this person and make $100,000 a year. I make $20,000 a year. How is that helping me? That's not helping me. How can you show me how can you go into the community and show people, okay, this is you don't want to, this is not where you want to stay. There's something better. You know, they make a lot of different plans, but nobody is really helping. You know, it's like all talk. You know the saying, money talk or whatever, bullshit walk or whatever they used to say, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all talk. You know, there's no action in a right plan action to say, hey, you know, we have these group of people that live in low-income communities. What can we do to help them, you know, become middle-class citizens, raise their income up, and, you know, get them out of, working minimum wage, 9 to 5, you know, different things like that. You know, you have the bus thing, and, okay, what else we can, you know, instead of focusing on rerouting these buses, now people are going to have a hard time to get to work.
Right. There is an agency in the city who is responsible, you know, for anti-poverty initiative, the Office of Community Wealth Building. So that's supposed to be their primary focus, is to raise people out of poverty and to give them the support that they need to make those kind of changes in their life. So that's their job to do that as far as enrichment.
Okay, so my next question is, how come the African-American community, you know, I tell people every day, especially those of color, there are a lot of things out there for us. Why don't you just go get it? You know, nothing is going to be handed to you on a silver platter. Nobody's not going to walk up to your door and ring your bell and say, here you go. But there's a lot of information out there, a lot of things that we have access to. How come do you think that the African-American community have a hard time of, okay, getting the information? You know, like you say, your organization goes out, and I see y'all every day, just about going, you know, door to door, getting people to sign petitions, getting people input on different things, and getting them involved in the different marches and protests. But how come there's not enough engagement from the community? You know, from that community, how come no one wants to, you know, get up and get engaged? I mean, sometimes I think it's fear, or is it just the miseducation of it?
I think that it's not so much an issue with black people, but it's a issue with low income and undereducated people. So
okay.
I think that though that type of disengagement you're going to find in all areas, you know, across all races in low income areas. And that's because, in my opinion, it's due to the disengagement, the disregard for decades of those communities. So eventually, you're not going to, if a kid keeps complaining to his mother, you know, he keeps calling his mother, like, Mom, can I get this? Mom, can I have that? 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 And then she never responds to him. Or she says, oh, okay, we'll think about it. We'll think about it. You know, okay, maybe later. You know, and she never gives anything to him, to that child. Eventually, he's going to learn to stop asking, you know. And so somebody may come along and they'll say, oh, you wanted that candy over there? Well, why didn't you ask your mother? You know, and they say, well, you don't want to do anything for yourself. You don't even want to open your mouth and go over there and ask her. You see what I'm saying? But he's been taught. He's been taught from the experience of his life that that call isn't going to be answered.
Okay. I see what you're saying, and you're right. You're so right. And it's sometimes it's sad because, you know, there's not enough involvement. And one of the things I would like to see, you know, people of color, our color, African-American communities, especially those that live in the low-income communities that come together to band together to, you know, if we all come together, we can actually change something. You know, we can inspire someone to say, okay, you know, we can, let's go back to the table. Let's go back to the drawing board. You know, let's rethink this. Let's rethink this plan. Let's see how we can change this plan and make it better. Let's, okay, the people need access to health care. People need access to food. People need access to schools and different things like that. Let's go back to the drawing board and let's rewrite this plan. What do you think?
Well, I think that there are organizations that are working on sustainable solutions right now. I deal with a few of them, and we're getting some things going in the Mosby area and other areas of the East End. So there are people that are actually putting their work in creating change. And I think that when you actually, when you do this work in the community, that it does spread and people are getting engaged. But see, me personally, I believe that the model that's being used for community engagement, it's outdated, and it's not, I don't think that it's, it takes into account the culture of the communities where the engagement is being sought. I think that if we know that, hey, every time we schedule these meetings for community engagement, we only get 3 residents to come in, and if this is the case for decades, then we should be able to adapt to that and understand that community and adapt to that. So I'm not really fond of that model of community engagement where we schedule this meeting over here and we expect for residents to make their way over to the meeting, you know, and there's a lot of residents, they may not have transportation to these meetings, or the meeting may not be addressing the issues that they feel are in their community.
My thing is that why not take the meeting into the community instead of, okay, we're going to set up the meeting here, there, versus, you know, we're going to have it at City Hall, we're going to have it at this school, and, you know, this, we're going to have it at this rec center. Why not go into the community, set up a stand and a bullpen, and, you know, directly in the heart of the community, close off the street and have one big community meeting? Why not do something like that? That would seem to be feasible to me because people are, you know, easily, okay, let me see what's going on out here. You know, like they used to do way back in the 60s and the 40s and 30s and 20s, you know, when people would take a soapbox and stand on a corner and just shout out and start and draw crowds in. Why not do it like that?
I don't know. You'd have to ask them.
That would get people involved and want to hear what you got to say. And going back to what you said, that, you know, they don't have meetings on what people really want to hear about. Because some of the meetings are not interested, either interested, or it's not something they want to hear about with, you know, something where it's still, okay, this is a really big need, you know. Community low-income families and single parent households, living in low income communities, need better access to health care, better access to groceries, or better access to schools. You know, that seems important to me.
Right, it is. And that, just to go back to what I was saying about the community engagement, I think that there is also a degree of like unease. I don't know if I would call it fear, but sometimes it is fear. But I think a lot of times it may be it could be like a self-esteem type of thing that, as long as I go to this meeting, you know, and people aren't going to value my input because I'm just, you know, I'm just a low-income resident. I'm over here. I get high. I do this or whatever, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, how people going to say, are people going to value what I have to say? Are people going to judge me and say, oh, well, she over there, she get high and everything, you know, but that's still a community member, you know, so... Mm-hmm. I think stuff like that comes into play also. Like they do have meetings at sometimes that are actually really close to the neighborhoods or in the neighborhoods, and the engagement still ends up being low.
Okay.
But one thing is that the people don't care because, you know, if you go door to door, if you go to the people, they will tell you their concerns, and they'll say, you know, what they're concerned about and how it affects them. And, you know, and this is the stuff that I hear when I engage the people direct. You know, I don't tell them, hey, I'm having a meeting over here, and I need you to come over there at this time. And that's not the way that I do a community engagement. I go to the people, and we will have a meeting right there at your door. You know, and whoever is around, they're going to join in our discussion, you know. I just think that that's a more cost-effective way to do it, and I think that it's a more effective way. But I'm not sure why they want to stick to the same old model that's been getting the same results, and so that they can remain frustrated with the residents that they're supporting, that they're representing, you know, and. They can present this narrative that the community doesn't care, the community doesn't get involved, the community doesn't want this and whatever, you know, or disinterested when it's not true. It's just, you know, if you're using the same model that doesn't work, it's just not going to work.
So what are some of the other things that you are doing in the community?
Right now there's supposed to be an effort to plant gardens in Mosby Court. I went around there for the past couple of days speaking with the residents about the possibility of that, and the participation was pretty high. Most people, no one said that they thought it was a bad idea. Everyone said that it was a good idea, and, you know, they just had concerns about, you know, maybe, you know, kids messing up the garden and stuff, but everyone was really enthused about that. So I think little things like that go to enhance the quality of life of people who live certain places when, you know, they can see, you know, better imagery, better scenery around in their community. Also, there's the aspect of people getting exposed to fresh vegetables and just to even understand how the relationship between something growing and something, you know, get into our plate, you know, because we do have an issue with food access in these communities, so a lot, especially healthy food access. So, you know, transportation comes into play with all of that. So, let's see, what are we doing right now? We are, I'm working up on a proposal to accommodate some of the transportation issues, challenges that we have in the city to try to fill in the gaps of some of the missed opportunities So I'm working on that. Also, we're still very much engaged with the transit advocacy. Those changes are supposed to be going in the fall. We just recently got word Monday that the work that we had done to save bus coverage in Mosby Corp was successful, and that they reversed their decision, which was going to remove bus coverage in Mosby Corp, which is, you know, densely populated with low-income black people. So that was a good thing, because that provides a lot of job access to residents in, you know, that that public housing area that are trying to, you know, get some economic independence. So that's good that we were able to keep that. There was also, you know, a lot of safety concerns that if they were to remove that bus, if people happen to walk further to get to the bus, you know, in streets that they may not particularly feel safe in. So that was good. That was one of the more recent efforts that we were successful on. But also, I'm a part of our organization participates in a think tank that is focused on the East End and getting sustainable solutions into the community, so that the whatever project that we implement can fund itself and use it, have consumers from the community and also staff members from the community. So those are the things that are being worked on.
Okay. So what about in your own community where you live? We had the meeting that took place. What are some of the things that are going on with, you know, within that community?
Well, in my community, right now we are we're supposed to be trying to get another basketball court out here. You know, the basketball court that I put out here got a lot of good use, and so now it's a little damaged out here. So I think I should be able to get some, maybe I'll work with you on that so that we can get another basketball court out here. You know, you have relationships with some organization. But, you know, recently, you know, we had ended up saving the bus stop out here that was proposed to be removed. That was, you know, a couple months ago. Regarding the tenant advocacy, I actually was supposed to go to court with someone, you know, again.
Yeah, I think we can work on getting another basketball court out, goal thing out there for kids.
Yeah, because like sometimes
contact somebody. You know, I know that he's going to donate one and a couple of balls.
Well, yeah, let's get together on that. Because like I know that basketball hoop is really an asset to the community. You know, it's something to do. So that's going to become an issue, you know, soon.
Yeah. Because I've noticed a lot of kids, some the kids be using it sometimes when they're outside.
Yeah, they'll be out there at like 3 a.m. sometime.
Yeah, 3 o'clock in the morning. Soon, they'll be in bed sleep going to school tomorrow. Going to school the next day. But you could tell us the name of your organization and where people can go to view, you know, some of the videos that you all have, and you know, if they're in the state of Richmond, Virginia, they can get involved. But if not, they can, if you don't live in the state of Richmond, Virginia, get an idea of what Omari and his team are doing and get inspired to, you know, help your own community out. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, well, my website